This program is a production of the Reformed Forum, an organization devoted to producing and distributing Reformed theological content for a connected age. Online at reformedforum.org. This is the Reformed Media Review, episode number 41. Today we speak about new media and the technological frontier. Welcome to the Reformed Media Review, your regular look at books and culture from a Reformed perspective. My name is Camden Busey, and I am very excited today. We are broadcasting out of our studio on the campus of Westminster Theological Seminary. More information about that later in the program. But before we get started, I want to mention that we are broadcasting live at reformedforum.tv in both audio and video, switched video, and we're trying to work out all the kinks, and there are many of them, but hopefully here in the next few days, we will be running smoothly, having video programs, video productions of most of our programs. Let me start off here to my left. I have in studio Jonathan Brack, who is admissions counselor at Westminster Theological Seminary. Welcome to the program, Jonathan.
Hey, Cannon.
It's great to have you. We've got the dueling Mac brothers here. For those of you watching the video, you can see on the camera. White shirts, MacBooks, microphones with pop filters. You heard his voice laughing. We have also the director of admissions at Westminster, Jared Oliphant. Welcome back, Jared.
Thank you for having me, Camden.
It's been several hours since the last program that we have recorded.
That's true.
But I'm very excited today. We have a wonderful and interesting episode. We are going to be speaking to a developer, one who has developed our iPhone app. He just so happens to also be my brother. We're welcoming to the program Kelly Busey. Welcome to the program, Kelly. It's nice to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Kelly's calling in from Skype, all the way from Peoria, Illinois. Kelly works for Caterpillar Incorporated, where I used to work. Kelly used to be my summer intern when I worked there.
No way.
And he took over doing all my all the jobs I didn't want to do when I left to come to Westminster Seminary.
I'm still doing them.
And he's still doing them.
In true intern style.
Doing a great job, I'm sure. Well, today we're going to be speaking, as I mentioned, about a number of things, but we're going to start with the iPhone app. And we have been very blessed to have Kelly work on this application. It is free in the App Store. If you happen to have an iPhone, you just load it up and you can start browsing and listen to all of our content. Hopefully, we'll be able to have live video in the future, but you can listen to the live audio. Now, Kelly, why don't you get started and just let us know, generally speaking, what this app does and what you hope to do with it in the future.
Well, right now, this app, you can actually listen to just live radio from Reform Forum. You can also listen to all the different episodes and programs that you guys put out. Well, let's see here. There's also blogs. So I know you guys produce, well, your network does Reformed Family, Historia Salutis, and
Feeding on Christ.
Those three.
Right.
Those are up there. So you can view all the articles and read those. And
for those who don't have the app yet or aren't by a video camera, what does the app show right when you open it up?
Shows a list of programs that you guys produce.
And then
I can actually put it on the screen here for the people with video.
Oh, Mr. Fancy.
Sweet.
But it'll show a list of programs like Crisis Center, Reform Media Review, and all that. And then you can tap a program to actually view all the episodes for that. You can search episodes. You can just browse them. So there's plenty of episodes since you've had a few years of content now. So
yeah, I think this is, episode 41 of Reformed Media Review, Christ the Center. We just recorded 137 this morning, so we've been cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't missed a week of CTC in 3 years. So
that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, we've got a lot of material, and it's all available right at your fingertips through the iPhone app. Kelly, what's the current state of Reformed Theology iPhone apps?
Excellent question. Yeah.
Well,
Kelly, out of all of them, don't miss any of them. Out of all of them,
every single one.
Yeah. Just a broad survey of Reform Forum iPhone.
Well,
apps.
They're few and far between. there are a lot out there that are pre-bought, I guess you could say. there are companies out there that just make these apps for churches and whatnot, and they all kind of look the same. But Reform Forum has the privilege of actually having their own that I made. So, there's not a lot of them. That's the state, and I'm glad we're first.
Yeah, I'm awesome. Glad we're first too. It's been a long time coming. I remember calling you about a year ago, you know, last summer, asking what we might be able to do with an iPhone app to try to get all of our content connected in a mobile space, because we want to be at people's fingertips and allow them to access all this Reformed theology wherever they are. And so you're a little hesitant at first, but over time you got into the developer program and decided to plug away at it. For those who might not know, who aren't keeping up with the tech world, what is the whole process of developing an app like, and what goes into it, and how do you actually get it up into the App Store?
And is there a Christian way to develop it?
We'll get to that. Jonathan's trying to bring us back into
our
theology, what this actually means. We can speak about that in a minute. But what are just some of the general steps that you had to go through to get this thing running?
Well, you have to have a Mac to actually develop iPhone apps. That is a downfall for a lot of people, because Macs are pretty expensive. But luckily, I did have one, and I do have an iPhone. So I guess the first step is to, well, have a Mac, I said that, and then you have to have the developer tools, I guess you could say. It's Xcode and Interface Builder and all these tools that Apple provides for you. And then once you have that, you can actually start developing applications. In order to put the app, in order to sell it or put it out for free on the App Store, you have to have a developer account. That's about, I think it's $100 a year. And that allows you to publish many different applications. You only have to have one account to publish.
So you pretty much have to buy the right to put apps up in their store, and you have to, you know, agree to certain terms, and then you have to pay for it, and then you you go ahead and write the apps on the machine that they provided.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's
starting to notice a theme here.
While wearing the t-shirt that promotes them.
Yeah, you're starting to notice a theme. Yeah, Apple's a closed environment here, and that's part of how they view themselves keeping up their quality. So it's not easy for a ministry to go and do these sorts of things, which leads me into the question, opening it up more generally speaking, theologically speaking, maybe ecclesiologically speaking. How does the church engage in these sorts of things? And should they be spending all this effort, or is this a good way for them to stretch out and purchase things like this? Or should they even be involved in buying apps and getting involved in this space? Is it a good thing as a church?
You're opening it up?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you want to start off?
I was just going to say, I think it's great. I consider it as another tool to help the church, as long as a clear distinction remains between getting audio offline, even listening to sermons that you download from the internet, as long as that doesn't replace worship. I think we had Dr. Truman on later about Lutheran media, and he explained how bodies are important. So
bodies are important.
Yeah, as far as worship goes. But as far as information, networking, and just promoting Reformed theology, we should, you know, jump in and use these tools as much as we can.
Is it possible, you think, for people to get so consumed with these things where they don't view themselves as having the proper ministry or doing the proper things if they're not getting involved in all of these technological areas?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's probably a case-by-case basis depending on your ministry and your time and everything like that. I think, you know, a good thing to remember is that anything can be misused. And so if you spend way, way too much time focusing on technology and not the people who the technology is supposed to serve, that's obviously a misbalance. But I think Jonathan's point is right that, you know, there are a lot of different ways to use these kinds of things that are coming out to communicate what you want to communicate to people through various means, you know. So, you know, an iPhone app is one. Video is another. That's why we're trying to do this, is just to communicate the same message through different media.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're exactly right there. Now, Kelly, what are some things that your church does, technologically speaking? Do they have a website, and what sorts of things are available on the website?
Yes, they have a website.
Where do you go to church,
have,
just for the people that are wondering?
Yeah, they have a website, and they
where do you go to church?
Sermons.
What church?
It's ChristChurchPCA.org.
And that's a PCA church in Normal, Illinois?
Normal, Illinois.
It is Normal.
Yes.
And so, sorry to cut you off there. What's available on the website?
Podcast. That's the weekly sermon.
So is this iPhone app something that a church might be able to install if they were interested and actually get it running so that their podcast could be available on the iPhone?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And neat.
Yeah.
I don't really have much to say about
that's
that.
That's correct.
So it's definitely very possible. So,
well, you mentioned that the current state of Reformed theology in technology is pretty nascent. There isn't a whole lot of Reformed theology in various media, and what's out there is very much developing, like what we're doing, et cetera, in other places. And as we venture off into these different technologies, I mean, what should we consider? What types of things should we look into? Should we just always go about doing what the technology world is doing, or do we try to evaluate these things more critically and pick and choose what might be helpful? Do you have any opinions on that, guys?
I mean, going back to the question that you asked earlier, a lot of pastors now are going to things like Twitter just for information to the audience that uses that type of thing. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. A lot of churches are using the Facebook page to keep members updated on what's going on, to link to like the sermons that they do. And so, I mean, again, I think it's just, you know, how you use it. I think in Reform circles, there's way too much of a fear of technology from the get-go. I think, you know, if we're going to fear something, fear how it's being misused, you know, in a tangible way, not the possibility of it being misused. And again, I think if you can use a technological means to communicate good content, then I see no problem doing it.
Hmm. I think, you know, media ecology can be a helpful thing here, and that's a fancy word for trying to understand not only what to do, but, and how to use media, but what effects media can have upon the message. Or upon how you receive that message.
Yeah, kind of a Neil Postman type of.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Neil Postman is very much in the media ecology space. So one example, for instance, Twitter. Kelly, do you think it would be a good idea to tweet during the service?
No. I think, didn't Chad Ochocinco get fined today for tweeting during a football game?
Really?
So if you're not allowed to tweet during the football game,
wow.
You're not allowed you really to shouldn't be tweeting football. During church.
Oh, yeah, completely.
Well, I mean,
you know, I think Mars Hill allows or encourages tweeting during the service.
That would surprise me.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Mark Driscoll's church?
Yeah.
Okay.
And
let me be fair. It's more of asking, they do like a ask the pastor.
Oh, okay.
Thing. Yeah.
Oh, so it's a section of the service.
Yeah, I think they do it after.
Okay.
I don't know. It may have changed. But.
Well, regardless, let's talk, for instance, what would happen if we actually opened Twitter up to the whole service? You end up with a non-corporate activity going on.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so just as an example, you've decided to take the proper worship and communication that goes on in the worship service into your own hands.
Right.
And you're communicating with a couple people over here or with your network and other people aren't seeing it. And it becomes, you know, very individualistic or a subset of the entire worship service. Whereas the worship service is supposed to be the community of God's people and supposed to be worshiping according to his design,
mm-hmm.
where you have the preached word and the sacrament and then the singing and the offering, all these different elements that we have in our typical worship service.
Yeah.
One example in which a technology would not enhance that, but would take away from it.
And, you know, take it to its logical conclusion. I think, you know, if you allow that, then allow IMs too, because IMs are basically faster tweets. You know, I mean, it's just a series of short messages, but they're just a little bit quicker. And so, you know, communion comes around and it's the person in the third row didn't take today. You know, just, you know, it can get pretty absurd.
Yeah. I was also going to mention just the simple fact that not necessarily what exactly we were talking about, but as far as the more and more the church get involved in internet and Facebook and podcasting, I think it's important to know that everything you say basically can be copyrighted, and everything that you write can be copyrighted as far as when you put something down on a blog. So sometimes a lot of people think that since it's the internet, it's just sort of a piece of paper that you can write on and then throw away, as opposed to this has ramifications, and your words have meaning no matter if it's in the on the internet or if you're actually writing a book. So everything you do, you know, sort of do with Christian excellence in a public sphere as well, like the internet, and don't treat it just sort of nonchalantly. I think that's another important.
Yeah, I think as we discuss the church and Christianity in a new technological world, we need to talk about a lot of things, not only just what it is to love our neighbor and treating them correctly, but all the legal issues of copyright and intellectual property. Mm-hmm. We need to hold ourselves to an appropriate standard there. And we need to be upfront about what we're doing, and we need to really love our brother and not steal. So this entire world.
That's excellent.
Yeah, but I mean, that's fast and loose. So there's it's a wild west out there in the internet land with digital goods.
Yeah.
It's a changing landscape, and we need to understand it better.
Which is a question that I have that we don't have to answer today, but I think it is a good question as far as programming goes. So maybe Kelly can say something to this, but open source, is that what's the Christian dialogue with open source and
that's
closed?
A really good question.
Yeah.
Kelly, what are your personal opinions on open source? Then we can talk about the theology of it.
I'm all for it, actually. There are advantages and disadvantages to each, both open source and closed environments. I guess the advantage to a closed environment like Apple's is you have more control over your devices. You have more control over the look and feel of your applications because you know where they're going to be, what they're going to be on, and like screen resolutions and all of that. So for the Reform Forum iPhone app, all we have to worry about are iPhones, iPod touches, and eventually the tablet, the iPad.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Whereas an open source environment, you got a lot more things to worry about, and more things to test. And so that can be a good thing too, because you have a bigger audience, and so forth. So
you're also speaking, you can write open source software for closed platforms, just because Apple's platform is closed itself. You can definitely write open source software. I think the principle in general is interesting because a lot of people have very hard and fast opinions about open source software, thinking that no, we have an obligation to be creative and to give that creativity back to the community. And we think about all the open source software that we enjoy and that we use. If you ever use Linux, if you have an Android phone now, that's open source, mm-hmm. based on open source. If you've used OpenOffice, Thunderbird, Mozilla Firefox, I mean, we could go on naming. Mm-hmm. If you've ever been to a website, because most of them are running, a lot of them are running the Apache web server.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's so much open source software out there, it's hard not to come into contact with it. Now, you've taken that much benefit by using all this stuff. Do you have an obligation now to contribute back, if you're able, back into the pool? Or do you have an obligation to support the developer who made this? Or do you just take advantage of his goodwill? What do you guys think?
Oh, man.
Do you just take advantage of his goodwill?
It's probably case by case, isn't it?
Yeah, it's probably a wisdom issue.
Yeah.
Which is almost just a cop-out.
That's the way to answer. I don't know. I don't know. But
well, can you like give an example? I mean, you're way more informed about tech related issues and website and what's going on over there.
Well, maybe if we talk about books, mm-hmm. you write a book, mm-hmm. You wrote it. It's your production. Mm-hmm. Do you owe the community anything by, do you give your book away? Do you give it to the community and let it be public domain?
Yeah, well, you know, someone who can comment at length on this is Vern Poitras,
yeah,
who teaches here at Westminster. And there's the Frame Poitras website. I don't know the URL right now. Maybe we can put it in our notes or something. But if you Google it,
I think it's frame-poitras.org.
Yeah, something like that. But, you know, his policy is just making all of those things completely available for free in PDF form and MP3 form so that people can benefit from them. And I know that he doesn't ask for anything. So there's one approach. I'm not saying that's the right one that everyone should do. But, you know, it's a guy who's really thought through these issues and just says, hey, great content. We should make it as prevalent as possible.
Mm-hmm. I have particular views, but I think, you know, we don't owe anything to the community per se, but I think it's also a good thing if you want to write open source software. I think mm-hmm. it's a Christian thing. I don't think it's the only Christian thing, but I think it would be a Christian thing and a generous thing and a way to love our brothers by writing software and opening it up and trying to get collaboration from the entire community, and other people can add to it.
Right.
And, you know, you can take advantage and benefit from what they add to the code. And it's just a big, you know, fancy, fuzzy, you know, group of love hugs.
Fancy, fuzzy group of love hugs.
Well, Kelly, hey,
that's a great band name.
Yeah, love hugs.
Kelly?
Yeah, I wouldn't have gotten into programming if it wasn't for open source. Because I mainly got into programming in high school with just all open source database, open source language. And
because they're free, often
because they're free, exactly.
Open source doesn't necessarily mean free, but oftentimes it is,
right?
And so you wouldn't have even been able to basically have a job right now if it wasn't for open source.
You could say that.
Pause.
And I really wouldn't have gotten started coding. And yeah.
Yeah, I just remember, I'm completely not a computer guy per se, but I just remember, you know, when Windows was starting up, all the freeware programs that were out there for just anything that you can think of. And apps, I guess, are kind of like a mini version of that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you think of something that you want your computer to do, and there was probably a freeware version of it, you know, from the simple tasks.
Yeah. Well, I think this is an interesting discussion. I'd like to have Vern Poitras on sometime to talk more philosophically and intellectually about it. But there are a lot of different views. There's not one Christian answer to the question of intellectual property and open source. I think there is a correct Christian answer that if somebody does not open up or license their materials for free use, that we are not at the liberty to take it.
Sure, right.
Moving on and transitioning, of course, Reform Forum has much to owe to the open source community. We use the Apache web server. We use a lot of open source. Icecast does our audio streaming and
the database.
MySQL database. WordPress runs our websites. That's all open source. I'd be at a loss if I didn't have this PHP. You know, everything we run on open source, and we're at the brink of a really neat new era in Reform Forum's ministry. If we want to call it ministry, some people have a hang up about that. Mm-hmm. But we're here, as I mentioned, in a new studio here at Westminster Theological Seminary. We're broadcasting out of one of the offices that used to be the bookstore. And we've done that because we've entered into a partnership, a contract that enables us to use this space and a lot of Westminster's equipment in exchange for some labor that we're going to do on the video front. But Jared, maybe we could talk about Westminster's video initiative, talk about where they would like to go with media, and then how that fits into where Reform Forum wants to go and how we think this is going to be a really good benefit for everybody.
Yeah, sure, definitely. I mean, our whole goal with any type of media that we do is just trying to, a lot of the times condense what you get in the classroom into a popular level message. So we've done a whole lot of videos so far on various topics in systematic theology, church history, apologetics, trying to communicate what our approach is to many of those disciplines. And that was actually just Jonathan and myself picking up an amateur camera and pointing it at professors and say, hey, talk about X. And they said, okay, great. And Westminster in the past hasn't really been great about incorporating media into what they're trying to communicate to a popular level and into the church as a whole. So we tried to fill that gap. And what we're trying to do with this new studio is to make that or have that be the goal, but just do it in a more presentable fashion.
More professional.
Yeah. And hopefully have the popular church, you know, not the popular church, but the church at large, the people in the pew have better access to those types of things. And so we really want to get different professors interacting with each other in a way that wasn't possible before. We want to have students comment on what they're learning in classes so you can hear from them. You don't have to hear from myself when I'm, you know, in the role of director of admissions. So that's really what we're trying to do, is just to get it out as much as possible in a very professional and presentable way.
Mm. No, I think that's great. And the Reform Forum is all about trying to provide Reform theological resources for a connected age. That's what I put on a lot of at the beginning of a lot of our programs, that tagline. And what I mean by that, what we all mean by that, is trying to get good, solid content from Reform professors, pastors, other people, students, and trying to put that into people's hands or in their ears or let them see it wherever they are. Whether that's mobile, whether that's at home on a computer, maybe someday on the radio or something like that, on a regular television. We don't care. Downloadable media, DVDs, as long as the material is getting out there. And so bringing this around full circle, this comes back to our live initiative and also to the iPhone app. What are some things, Kelly, on the live front that we're looking at connecting with the iPhone app, and how much of a present reality is that going to be?
Well, we have audio right now, and we hope to have video soon. So that's, I can't say when that's going to come out, but that is the goal.
And what are we looking at in terms of notifications and letting people know?
Oh, right. We do have an update coming out. I'm probably going to submit it to the App Store very soon once we get some testing done on it. But we're going to have push notifications, which will allow us to send out notifications saying we're going to go live in, you know, so many minutes. And then they can just hit that, and then it fires up the live player. So
yeah, that was really cool. I was actually driving on my way over here, and I got a little notification on my iPhone that says, live recording at 6. And I was like, oh, okay. I guess I better be over there now. So that was a cool feature. Yeah, it did work.
Yeah, I think that, you know, once we have this whole loop closed off, we're going to be able to do some really neat things. And the mobile app is crucial to that, so that people, if they want it, they don't have to get the updates and all that sort of thing. But if they want, they'll be in the loop. They'll know when we're live. They'll be able to watch. And if they're on the train and they're have some time, or if they're in a line and they want to hear, you know, a 3-minute update, pop on the app. And hopefully we'll be on other platforms in the future, too. It won't just be iPhone.
Yeah, we're going to definitely be on Android in the future. So.
Nice.
And the other thing that I wanted to mention, this is just going back to what we discussed earlier, just very briefly, is of course we're here at Westminster, but I love engaging people from other backgrounds, from other seminaries. And so I don't want it to come across as it's just a Westminster Seminary project or anything like that. We're going to have a couple people from, one person, Gabe Fleur from Greenville, and then Carlton Wynn, who went to RTS Charlotte.
Yeah, just in a few minutes, if you're listening live, stay tuned.
Yeah,
and actually, I think they're coming up the stairs now.
Are they really? Are they here?
Maybe. I don't know. I hear some steps.
But I was also going to say guest lecturers that come on campus as well.
Yeah.
And any debate forums we have in the future, we can begin to stream it. We can also go ahead and mention that we'll be streaming the full confidence conference. We'll be attempting to stream it. And so things like conferences, debates, when we have guest lectures on campus, so we'll have Al Mohler on campus. We can have him come and talk to different professors, engage. And so it's not just located at, you know, or just Westminster, period. Mm-hmm. It's others as well.
Yeah, and there's a broad constituency internationally too. So people come from you know, seminaries all over the world. We had Stafford Carson. We interviewed him here. We had a couple guys from a couple seminaries over in Korea. So anyway, it's just that all that is to say that, you know, anyone who is of interest in the Reformed world, regardless of background, we'd love to have them on and just kind of dialogue with them.
Yeah, I think that we've got some really neat opportunities here for using technology and getting all of these things connected, talking to people, and doing some really advanced stuff.
As you say that on a split screen.
Quad screen, my
quad
brother.
Screen. Yeah, you're right.
Camden.
Who's Kelly?
Camden.
It's like the Brady Bunch.
Hey, oh, man. For those who aren't watching, you need to go online and just download this video and laugh at us. We're having a good old time. So I think that's pretty good. You know, we'll have more on the studio here in the future. Hopefully we'll be able to sit down with Jay Kusalina, who's Reform Forum's vice president, and also maybe sit down with some other people and talk more about the partnership between Westminster and Reform Forum. And again, it's not exclusive. This isn't like, you know, we belong to Westminster or anything like that. It's just a really great opportunity. Both of us being in the area, Westminster having some space, and us having some abilities, we're going to be able to make some trades and be able to do some really neat things. If we didn't have this space, we wouldn't be able to do this. But Reform Forum, of course, we give away our content for free. We don't have any revenue model,
right.
At least at the moment. The iPhone app is free. All of our content's available free online. But it does cost to produce all of these resources, and it's going to cost us even more to do video and to have that stored and to be able to stream it, to have all these sorts. You can see the dollars starting to add up. And none of us takes a salary, and we basically make most of our money just basically on donations. And it's not much at all. Right? At the moment, we're probably pulling in a couple $100 a month, and it's barely covering the cost. But we can't sustain our growth, and we can't sustain our labors for a whole lot longer without some added support. Not to be, you know, Mr. Doomsday here, but
give us money.
But I do want seriously to put an appeal out there and ask and say, if you're able, if you enjoy what we're doing, if you've found benefit, you know, visit us online at reformedforum.org. At the top of the page, the top right, there's a big donate now button, and it's a way for you to donate through PayPal. You can also find our address there. You can send us a check if you're able to PO Box 27422, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania 19118. That's PO Box 27422, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania 19118. And we are filing for 501c3 recognition in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah,
we've been recognized as a nonprofit in Pennsylvania. And I have everything finalized for the paperwork. I just have to turn it in, and we'll double check it with my board and everything.
Mm-hmm. It's almost the model of, you know, Radiohead put out that album that was just like, hey, you know,
pay what you want.
Pay what you want. Yeah. What you think this is worth. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, we feel strongly about providing and supporting the church, and it's not wrong to charge, but we always want to have a majority of our content available for free. And I release a lot of it, all the audio, on Creative Commons, which is similar to open source. Not the same. It's a little more restricted, but we can get into that discussion another day. And that's because of a conviction mm-hmm. that we have. Now, we are not the church.
Right.
We are not. I would be very let me be very clear about that. We are not preaching God's word in the sense that that happens in the worship service, which is God's people worshiping him together in the presence of each other. But we are a parachurch organization in the best use of the word. And we exist not to replace the church, not to be a quasi-church, not to ever give the impression of that, but to support her, to support the church. And we do that by providing solid Reformed theological content and putting it in your hands at a minimal fee, you know, if possible for free, which is what we've been able to do to this point. So if you all that goes to say that if you're able, we would really appreciate any of your support. And you could just visit reformforum.org, and at the top of the page is a donate now button. And we'll be able to do all this video, produce this, and hopefully expand our live programming and expand our reach to other platforms.
Maybe we can get 8 screens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We could definitely step up the quality with some added equipment, some money, some bandwidth, all those sorts of things. We have ways of using the funds.
Donations are directly proportionate to number of screens.
Yes,
more exactly. Money, we'll have 23 screens.
Yeah, we can be super Brady Bunch here in the future.
Yeah.
Well, I think we'll close this episode of the Reform Media Review off for now. You can visit Kelly. Do you have a website online? You have a side project, Trail Rambler. You want to mention the website for that?
Sure. It's trailrambler.com, and you can it's for the outdoor enthusiast. You can post your trips and where you went and all of that.
So it's like geolocation, and you hope to have gear tracking, all that sort of thing on Trail Rambler. For the outdoor enthusiast, so take a trip to Heidelberg, go visit some stops, and then put all your points of interest in Trail Rambler. Westminster, of course, is online at youtube.com/Westminster Online and facebook.com/Westminster Online and plain old WTS.edu.
You can find iTunes U on our main page, WTS.edu.
Mm-hmm. And they're hopefully going to be expanding their multimedia offerings as well. Reformed Forum, as I've mentioned, is available at reformedforum.org. And of course, don't forget our new site, reformedforum.tv. There we hope to have live video feeds of all of our shows moving forward, as many as we're able, and also archived videos. So if you're not able to watch this live or you're listening to this on the audio download, please visit reformedforum.tv, and there we should have a video version if all goes according to plan.
And actually, all the video versions work on the iPhone too. Right now.
Cool.
So you can actually watch the YouTube recorded versions on the iPhone app after the fact.
Yeah.
Fun. Well, thanks, Kelly, for joining us. We appreciate having you, for taking the time out of your day to visit. And
thank you,
Jonathan and Jared, for stopping by. And I want to thank all the listeners and the viewers for tuning in. And we hope you join us again next time on the Reformed Media Review.